AccessCast, an accessibility initiative, presents Unstoppable Mindset, the podcast where inclusion, diversity, and the unexpected meet. Hi, I'm Michael Hinkson, Chief Vision Officer for AccessiBe and the author of the number one New York Times bestselling book, Thunderdog, the story of a blind man, his guide dog, and the triumph of trust. Thanks for joining me on my podcast as we explore our own blinding fears of inclusion, unacceptance, and our resistance to change. We will discover the idea that no matter the situation or the people we encounter, our own fears and prejudices often are our strongest barriers to moving forward. The Unstoppable Mindset podcast is sponsored by AccessiBe, that's A-C-C-E-S-S-I, capital B-E. Visit www.accessiBe.com to learn how you can make your website accessible for persons with disabilities and to help make the internet fully inclusive by the year 2025. Glad you dropped by. We're happy to meet you and to have you here with us. Well, hi there. Welcome to another episode of Unstoppable Mindset. Yep, we're back once again. We appreciate you being here. Thanks very much. Hope you enjoy what we have to talk about today. We are meeting with Kim Cohen, and what can I say about Kim? Well, let me tell you what she says. The first thing in her bio says she's a nerdy lit professor. I don't think it gets any better than that. She's a mom. She also says dogs over cats. I suspect that you'd get some disagreement on that, Kim, but especially from the cats. But Kim, welcome to Unstoppable Mindset.
Thank you so much, Michael. I really appreciate you inviting me on.
All right. What is this about a nerdy lit professor?
Well, I mean, I think I always loved stories. I mean, I grew up with my nose in a book every single day, I think, of my life, and just found, you know, that there was always, you know, a place to discover. And, you know, when I went to college, ultimately, you know, my degree, I focused, you know, in English, and then I just kept going. My master's and my PhD.
Nothing like reading good books.
Right. Yeah. Nothing like reading good books. And I love to play a book matchmaker. Like that is one of my joys of my job.
I remember growing up and probably didn't play outside with other kids nearly as much as maybe I would have liked to. But I also just got very much involved in reading both fiction and nonfiction, although I do like to read a lot of fiction. I think that fiction writers get to demonstrate a lot of imagination that sometimes we don't see in nonfiction in the same way. But reading is so much fun.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, I feel like there are stories that just change our lives. And there's such magic in that process, whether that story resonates with us because we feel seen or because we get to see into something that maybe we didn't understand. I know as an adult, I read a book, I was in my early 40s, and it was the first time I had really seen a character that was like me, that had a similar background in terms of, you know, coming from an interfaith family and where the one side of the family was Sephardic Jew and the other was, you know, not. And it was this odd, like I was bawling, I was crying because I had never as a kid seen a story like that. And it had the power to heal even then, even in my early 40s, which I think is part of the magic of a great story.
So you say that you had a diagnosis and there was a journey to get there. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, like a lot of women, sometimes some of the diagnoses don't happen because we don't always follow the textbook as well as other ways that sometimes things get defined. I also was definitely a child of the 80s. So a lot of things were just like, she has a nervous tummy. but once the sort of pandemic hit, I think a lot of the The carefully structured plans I had, my systems that kept me organized, all fell apart. And I didn't really understand what was going on, but at the same time, I was learning a lot about my child's diagnoses, and a lot of things felt super familiar. Like, I was like, wow, I really resonate with this meme from this ADHD group, or I'm really feeling some of these strategies or struggles that I'm reading about. And it really was this like almost parallel path of me learning about my kiddo and then starting to have this dawning realization about my own journey and where, you know, I definitely have that neurodivergent brain where things get super sparkly. But, you know, there were things where I just thought I just didn't have my act together and realized later, no, it's not that. Like, I don't need to kind of see that as a source of shame. My brain just works a little differently, and I need to learn how to exist with it, not in a constant struggle trying to make it work in a way that it doesn't want to work. That's not how it's wired. And I found myself, you know, saying things to my kiddo that I wanted him to embody, like, don't beat yourself up over this. Like, this isn't, you know, this is just, we just need this fix, or just need to think about it in this way. And started to really think about how I could, you know, also kind of take my own advice and not beat myself up for losing my keys again, or my glasses again. And that it's definitely been a journey, you know, and same with, you know, better understanding my anxiety and how that impacts me and what I need to do to kind of just, you know, generally stay healthy and not let it overtake.
So you're ADHD.
Yes, I have ADHD, I have anxiety. I've definitely struggled with depression. I notice my anxiety is at its worst when my ADHD is not under control. So there's definitely an intermingling there.
What does it mean, I guess, or what are the manifestations of ADHD that you recognize? And I gather that's what your son also has, sort of right. the same kind of experiences.
Yeah, I mean, I think I think it manifests, I think, slightly different in everyone, as with, you know, any diagnosis. You know, for me, I always describe myself as having a super sparkly brain. So I have a lot of ideas. I'm always somebody who, like, if you ask for, like, hey, what's a way to figure this thing out? I have, like, at best, like 13 different plans to get there. But it can also mean that, like, when I'm excited about something, I'm hyper-focused and I will work on that project and let a lot of other things fall away. And if I'm not interested in it, I will put it off, you know? So I have a hate relationship with laundry, because there's no part of me that likes it, no part of me that finds it interesting. And I would rather be doing anything other than taking care of it.
And it's probably, so, you're probably pretty normal in that regard, but yes.
Yes. But, like, you know, it definitely has an impact, you know. Losing things for me is, you know, my glasses, my keys, forgetting my keys in weird places, I think is definitely a part of it. But also, I think one of the things that I didn't realize was a part of the whole way in which attention works and focus works is, you know, when you call and you have to listen to the message and it'll say, like, press one for this, press two for this. And while I'm waiting, my brain starts to do other things and starts to think on other ways of, you know, I don't know, maybe it's what's for dinner. Maybe it's, like, what I'm going to do later. Maybe it's what, you know, a call I have later on in the day. And then all of a sudden I hear press star to repeat this message, and I've missed everything. And it's a guarantee that that's going to happen every single time. So just learning to, you know, be gentle with myself, that those are the kinds of things that I'm regularly going to kind of have to just repeat and not to beat myself up over it.
So you have learned or
working at learning not to beat yourself up and to recognize kind of what's going on?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that has been the biggest journey for me, is really giving myself some grace, you know, really thinking about, okay, would I give my kiddo grace in this situation? Would I give someone else grace who, you know, is telling me this story? Then what can I do for myself? And so one of the things that I'm really strong at as an educator, as a parent, is differentiation, which is essentially like, hey, let's take this thing we're trying to teach someone, but make it work for them. Like, what, how can we switch things up in the way we talk about it, or the way that we do it, or a tool or a process, so that it's equally accessible by all. And I'm great at making accommodations for my students, for friends, for my kiddo. And this year I'm like, okay, let's try to extend that accommodation to yourself, so that I'm not constantly setting myself up for feeling like I'm not doing what I should be doing. And instead just building those accommodations into my life, so that I just am not beating myself up, or I'm not like doubting myself, or, you know, creating some friction that's just completely unnecessary, when I could just put in a tool or a process or another notification for myself or whatever it is, so that I can stay on track.
I have maintained for many years that we are always our own worst critics, and we tend not to allow ourselves, as you would call it, the grace of making mistakes and learning from the mistakes. We beat ourselves up, but then we don't tend to take the next step and look at, well, what was really the problem? What did I do wrong? What could I do better? Or even if I did it exactly right, and not dwell forever on, my gosh, how could it have been better? But at least look at, how might I have improved it? Okay, I see what else I could even do to make it better, and then move on. And the moving on part is what's really right. Always a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think one of the, I suppose, unintentional gifts of something like ADHD is like, you fail, you fail a lot. You're dropping the ball. And so you have so many learning opportunities to figure out what's working. And I know that's something I bring with me in my teaching. It's something I bring with me in my parenting. And I'm really trying to give that to myself too. Like, okay, hey, you have this plan and it didn't work. What can we do next time? What's a different way to set this up? What's a time when it did go well? Why did it work then and not, you know, today? But that powerful piece of self-reflection is so critical.
Yeah, and that's probably the hardest thing to do, because your brain's going in so many different directions. But for everyone, it's the most important thing we can do.
Right. Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think that there's a power in that self-reflection, especially if we can move past the self-reflection that's berating, like, there you go again, doing XYZ, forgetting your best friend's birthday. And instead really thinking about, well, yep, that happened. And I let this person down. What can I do next time? Can I put it in my calendar right now for next year? What can I do to, you know, maybe not make that, or maybe it's not that big of a deal. You know, maybe my best friend knows I'm always going to forget her birthday. And she does. Like, she knows I'm going to always, I get her birthday month. Yeah.
But still, it'd be great if you didn't. And,
right.
And I hear exactly what you're saying. I know that it is sometimes easy for me to forget. It's out of sight, out of mind, right? And my favorite example of out of sight, out of mind, which is a little different, but we buy lots of boxes of Thin Mints every year from the Girl Scouts, which is, of course, as good as it gets.
Right,
but
yes.
We put them in the freezer, and I have had boxes of Thin Mints in the freezer for over a year. People would say that's sacrilegious, but heck no, there's more for next time. But the issue is they're out of sight.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, out of sight, of course, isn't just out of visual sight, since I'm not going to see them anyway, but they're not where I can touch them necessarily. And unless I go hunt for them in the freezer and remember them, they're really not there. But Other things, as you said, like events and so on. For me, the Amazon Echo device has become a wonderful thing because I've made it a habit, and I've had to work at it, but I've made it a habit that when I schedule something or if something occurs and I want to be reminded of it in 6 months, I'll create a reminder right now, just to make sure that I don't have to. Well, and that's the operative part. I don't have to worry about it because I know I'll get reminded.
Right. And I think I've used the Echo device a lot for those reminders in our family because it's so helpful. And then also as a parent, like then it's not me making the reminder. It's this external voice. and so that can remove a little bit of power struggle sometimes. But anytime I can build that accommodation in is a real win because the weight of being afraid that I'm going to forget something and being afraid that yet again, I'm going to forget something can be sometimes more debilitating than the actual forgetting of it. And so really trying to, when I can, you know, build those accommodations in and not judge myself, you know, for needing, you know, multiple reminders or, you know, it needs to have something on the calendar. Plus I need to write it down. Plus, you know, the Echo has to remind me. And so all of those things might need to be, you know, in place for me to just keep on track.
Yep. And it works. How old is your son?
He is 14 and a half.
Ah.
So he's a ninth grader right now in high school, which is, you know, it's a whole journey. parenting a teen, there are no manuals, unfortunately, for that stage.
Yeah, no one has written the book.
Mm-mm, no, not at all.
But it's a great age. I remember high school and had a lot of fun. I had some great teachers. I even keep in touch with one of them regularly, and even today, and definitely enjoy it. So it's really a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's being a teenager now is really complex in ways that I certainly don't remember. It was complex. I know as a kid, I was really shy, painfully introverted. And I didn't kind of come into my own, you know, for some time. I took a long time to bloom. You know, I think sometimes that's challenging. And for my kiddo, he's autistic, he has ADHD, a couple of learning disabilities. And so there's definitely challenges, you know, it's hard enough to pick up on social cues. And then sometimes when you have these other factors, it can be even more challenging in those spaces. And then, you know, thinking about, you know, all the things that you're learning, all the different subjects, and keep this test in mind or that test in mind on top of it all. It's just, it can be a lot.
Well, yes. But on the other hand, nothing a dog won't help, right?
Right. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Pet therapy. And we have a couple of chickens as well. And they are there to assist as well.
Do they interact much?
My son is the primary caregiver of the chickens. So we keep the dog separate from the chickens. but for my kiddo, the chickens have been great. You know, we got our chickens when he was about 5 or 6. And, you know, thinking it would be, you know, not only something, he's really great with animals, but it was also really nice to support him in developing some of those executive functioning skills in a real world way. Like he has to remember to take them out. He has to make time for that in the morning. He has to remember to collect the eggs. And then it's also a little business for him on the side. So he collects the eggs, he sells the eggs to our neighbors and things like that. And so that's definitely been, you know, a really nice confidence booster, I think, for him and a way for him to kind of build some of those skills.
Nothing like learning responsibility the hard way, just doing it.
Right. Yes. Yes.
What kind of dog?
She is a rescue dog. So we got her, our previous dog had passed away in the kind of early on in the pandemic. And so we had got a rescue dog, just a mix, probably some sort of mixed shepherd on the smaller side. But she came with a lot of trauma, as many rescue dogs do. But, you know, she's really coming into her own now, which is really great to see. And she's so much more confident and has so much less anxiety. But I think she landed in the perfect family because we all have our things here. And so we're super accommodating of, you know, whatever it is that she needs and her little, you know, her quirks and things like that.
Now, my dog, my guide dog, Alamo, would love to meet your chickens. I am sure he would go up and make friends. The chickens may not like it, but he would love to go make friends.
Yeah, our previous dog, Sadie, her and the chickens got along just great. You know, she was a pretty low-key dog, especially as she got older. Our current dog, Luna, still has a very fierce prey drive. And so she's, you know, we're working on at least, you know, her thinking that they are, you know, friends, not food.
In Alamo's case, you just don't want to get the eggs near his tail. They'd go flying.
Yes. Same with Luna, for sure.
Yeah. He has never met a stranger, no matter what it is. And that's the kind of dog I would always like to have. I think that the dog does take on somewhat somewhat the personality of the person who is its primary caregiver. And it's always good to set rules. And so that works out pretty well. Well, in your case, you went on to college, though, and I guess that all went well. So you're still here.
I am. Yes. I mean, I, in many ways, I feel like I'm like the perpetual student. I love learning new things. I think that's like part of that ADHD brain. I always am, you know, never far away from like obsessing on some new learning that I can do, whether it's like I need to learn everything about this new crochet technique or like everything I need to know about planting fruit trees or everything I need to know about, you know, some home maintenance thing. So, I mean, I'm kind of like that perpetual student. I always tell my students, I teach at a university and all my students are teacher candidates, that you know, my rule for myself is I know I'm done with teaching when I don't love learning anymore, because I can't teach others to love learning if I stop my love of learning.
So you definitely have gone through a process. So did you go straight into advanced degrees and get a master's and a PhD?
I did. Yes. Yeah. So my undergraduate, I had a lot of majors before I settled. I had 7 majors before I settled in creative writing, and my creative writing and fine arts degree was made with a promise to my parents that I would go for a graduate degree. And so I knew kind of right away that I would go into a program. I didn't actually get accepted initially when I applied for PhD programs. And so I had to kind of quickly rechart a path and went into a master's program, got that, and then was able to go on to a PhD program.
And how did you get involved in starting to teach?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, after I had my master's, that was, you know, I always knew that I wanted to teach. I started off, you know, always either being a tutor or one of my first kind of jobs that paid well in college was as a paraprofessional. So I knew I wanted to be, you know, a teacher. And one of the things that I really enjoyed in college was just some of those deeper conversations that we can have. And part of my degree programs were, you know, like, they're like, okay, well, you're here, you know, we're paying for part of your tuition or part of your package, so you teach as well. And so I kind of haven't looked back. I did take a little bit of a break after graduating because I just couldn't frankly find full-time work. There were so many hiring freezes. And I served as an instructional designer, which was great because that's a huge passion of mine. So really designing learning paths for students and working with, you know, different departments and programs for those things. But then, you know, when WGU really started hiring, I just kind of fell in love with their mission and who their students were and haven't looked back since.
Well, yeah, tell me a little bit about WGU, what it is, and anything you can about the program. What WGU is Western Governors University?
Yeah, Western Governors University. So when I started looking for, you know, full-time work, full-time teaching work, and I saw that they were remote, which really appealed to me at that time. Like my commute was an hour both ways over a mountain and a bridge, and I really was not happy with that commute. So not commuting was a huge appeal to me. And then as I started to really learn more about it, who their students were, most of them are, you know, adult learners returning to school. They might have had some college credit. Most of them are working. They have families. And I was hooked instantly. I remember as a kid, I think I was in like fifth grade, where my mom went back to school when she went back to college. And I remember that kind of family meeting we had. And, you know, she had told my brother and I that her goal was to graduate college before I graduated college. And I couldn't, you know, as a little fifth grader, couldn't conceive of someone having a goal like that far into the future. And she did end up graduating one semester before I graduated high school. But I thought, gosh, you know, if mom would have had a school like this, where she could have gone at her own pace, you know, in her own home, where she wasn't bound by, oh, I can only do this, you know, two nights out of the week because I've got my kids and I've got, you know, work and I've got this and I've got that, how life-changing that would have been. And that really was such a draw for me. I had always done a lot of work with adult learners, but really being able to dedicate my entire career focus to them meant a lot. And so right now at Western Governors, I'm in the Teachers College. So all my students are, you know, going on to get either, you know, they're trying to be either elementary teachers or special ed teachers. And I love it. I have such a big teacher heart, and I just could always talk to students about, you know, learning and how do you foster that love of learning? How do you help kids to write and read? And that's been one of my, you know, really, really proud things that I've had, is really being able to kind of, I don't know, just like help form the next generation of teachers.
So the question that comes to mind is, there are a lot of students at WGU and it's all online, right?
Yes, 100% online.
And it goes from, well, it's a 4-year college and does graduate work also?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So it means that the students have to be disciplined enough to undertake the studies, and yes, they do it at their own pace, but it still is a discipline that they have to learn to make sure that they do the classes and do the homework and all the other things, as opposed to being in an environment where you're a little bit more forced to do it because you're in a physical location, don't you think?
Right. Yes. No, absolutely. And I think, you know, I think one of the challenges in any remote program is, you know, how do you build community so folks stay engaged and connected and motivated? How do you build in supports so that if a student is struggling, they have pathways to, you know, get assistance? And, you know, all of those things, and especially, you know, in the midst of a pandemic, those factors are even, you know, more exacerbated when we think about, you know, a lot of my students, for example, are They're paraprofessionals, they're aides, classroom assistants, they're bus drivers, they're in the school system. And right now, you know, even still, you know, there's a lot of shortages, teacher shortages, sub shortages, bus driver shortages. And so, you know, they're stretched to the max. And so really helping them to find those support structures and to get the assistance that they need is a challenge. I think one of the things that I really love about WGU is that it does have a very student-centered approach, and we're constantly asking ourselves, what can we do better? What does it look like to leverage this technology, this system, to better support our students? And whether that's, you know, we have this new initiative for study halls, so students can come into it's effectively like kind of like a quiet Zoom room, like a study hall, where they can just get work done. They can share out each other's goals, celebrate each other. But it's this space that allows adult learners to throw it on their calendar and say, yes, mom is studying right now from 7 to 9, and close the door, and it feels now like sacred study time that they can commit to, where before it's like the dishes might be calling, or this kiddo needs a snack, or what about this, or all these other competing demands that they might have in their life. And I think that's the part that I've always really loved about WGU, is that it's just constantly looking for ways to meet our students where they're at and build the structures so they can shine.
So do you think that the whole experience of doing such a tremendous amount of online education and online work perhaps helped you and helps your students in some ways deal with what's been going on during the pandemic, when now suddenly everyone was thrust so much into doing things online?
Yeah. I mean, interestingly, like I had a lot of conversations with students about that, you know, where they would say, like, you know, we wouldn't just talk about what the course was about, you know, that I was helping them with through whatever content or concepts, but directly too about, you know, managing Google Classroom, or how do you share this out, or how would you handle, you know, this issue, or how can I make this more accessible to more of my students? And I think one of the things that I really try to do is draw a straight line, an explicit line for students. Do you see this thing I'm doing right now? This is how I'm modeling to you this process. So when you're in the classroom, you can do something similar. And so, you know, I mean, I think good teaching, especially of teacher candidates, we're not just teaching content, we're always modeling what is it to do good teaching, what are the best practices in the field, and trying to mark those moments for them is critical.
Yeah, it's really interesting to listen, for me at least, to all the people who complain about Zoom fatigue and having to spend so much time on Zoom, they can't be in the office. Mm-hmm. When in reality, yes, I understand that. And I understand the value of personal contact, close physical contact, if you will, but still doing what we can do with all the technological advances that we have today offers us so many opportunities to go in different directions that can enhance our lives. And we sort of miss some of that, I think.
Yes. You know, I mean, I think that's the thing that I, you know, come back to a lot, is that it gives so many of our students the opportunity to come back to school when their lives, or frankly, their location, they might be too rural, there might not be a school nearby them. And so it really gives them the opportunity to come back to school and allow that. And I know even from, you know, our own family experience, my son loved remote, loved it, preferred it. He felt like he could actually learn because he wasn't getting as distracted by whether it's, you know, some of the social things, peer conflicts, Or like the thousand little noises and distractions that happen in a classroom. And I think it really gave him a little bit of a break to learn how he learns and reset and think about, this is the strategy that I wasn't picking up on before. And now, you know, he's been able to, you know, he's like made high honor roll almost, you know, for the entire time during, you know, on Zoom. And so I think it gave him a window into what he could do and gave him some time to learn in a very focused way without some of those other, you know, distractions, whatever, you know, those like typical kid stuff, peer conflicts, bus drama, things like that.
Is he back to learning in the classroom? Is he back to the physical school?
Yeah, absolutely. Our district is back, you know, in person. And so, you know, I mean, of course, then that means, you know, all those typical kid dramas are definitely there, but he's been able to carry with him, you know, that learning about learning that he did. And he's been very successful. But I'm grateful. You know, I know not every kid did well during the pandemic. And I know in my district, we were very attentive to, you know, making sure that, you know, some of the kids who maybe had some technology barriers, who maybe needed hotspots and things like that, we already have a pretty much a one-to-one for technology for our kids already. But, you know, really making sure that everyone's needs were met. I know not every kid did well in the pandemic. It happened to be, you know, my kid did, but I'm also very privileged in that I work from home. So if he was struggling, I was right there. I mean, I was working, you know, but I was still home. And it's not like he was, you know, 100% on his own.
Again, we're kind of learning to write the book on how to work more in an online virtual world. And I think it's a little bit unfortunate that probably too many people are just emphasizing the downsides of it and not looking at some of the advantages that it can bring to help in not only learning, but just doing work in general.
Right. Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think even for myself working in a remote way, like I'm not a confident driver, you know, I have a lot of travel anxiety. And so, you know, being able to just work from home is then one less kind of weight on me because I can just go to work and I can focus on working. I don't have to worry about all of the things that go into traveling to a workplace. You know, I think there's a lot to be said for it, but I think there's also a lot to be said for knowing what you need. If you're the kind of person who really gets a lot of energy from working in close proximity to others, like it's not going to be your jam. You probably shouldn't look for that in a job, right. Or make sure that you've got other plans outside of that to get that, you know, that input and fill your bucket in that way. For me, it's like the opposite. So I need to make sure I've got, you know, more quiet time to fill my bucket. And certainly, you know, being remote allows for some of that.
Well, there's some value in simply taking more quiet time. And I think that most all of us never take enough quiet time, even if it's maybe going to bed 10 minutes earlier and lying and meditating and just thinking about the day. And again, getting back to introspection about what worked, what didn't work, and so on. It isn't that hard to do, but it's a habit that seems to be very difficult to make really happen in most of our lives. But, you know, here's a question. Mm-hmm. If you could give every student a post-it note to put on their desk, what would it say?
Yeah. So I am a big fan of the post-it notes for small.
They don't work for me, but that's okay.
Well, yeah, I'm a big fan of them as a way to remind myself of small things that I never want to lose sight of.
I do wish I had been the inventor of the post-it note, but yes, you know, that's a different story.
Right. I mean, I think I would have, you know, one thing that I would definitely put on there is, you know, never underestimate the magic of stories. I think sometimes we can get into the habit of maybe relying on books that we enjoyed as kids, but really seeing the power of story and looking for stories that can reflect the diversity in our classrooms and giving students a window into other ways of being. So definitely never underestimate the magic of stories would be one. Another thing that I always tell them, which would fit nicely on a post-it, is differentiation is the work of teaching. So sometimes folks can get into thinking that it's like extra, like, well, I have to do this extra thing for this learner who has this, you know, disability or this need. And, you know, I think we need to remember always that it's the work. There isn't anything other than that. And I would say, you know, the last piece that I always come back to is, you know, kind of like the secret sauce to being a good teacher is you just keep learning, keep reflecting always, like never stop that. I always tell my students when they, you know, they'll sometimes apologize to me and say, oh, I'm, you know I'm overthinking, I'm overcomplicating it. And I just remind them like, well, you know, you got sorted into the right house here in Teachers College. We all kind of overthink and overcomplicate, but it actually serves you well in the field. And so you need to always be examining what went well, what didn't, why did I fall on my face? Why did this not go as planned? How can I improve it for next time? And so, you know, just remembering like that is the secret sauce to just
adding into those questions. Why was this successful? Why did it work this time? Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yep, exactly. What went well? Why were more people engaged? How did this student who normally checks out check in? What was it about this lesson or this assignment or this reading that we did? All of those things. And helping then the students to make those connections and remind them like, oh, well, remember last time you did whatever it is, and you found that the problems were much more straightforward. So let's try that, so that we're modeling for the students how to build that recognition of how they learn, of how they can, you know, regulate, how they can own their own learning process.
Yeah, it isn't always where did we go wrong, just like in the producers, where did we go right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. But we are going to fall on our face. Like,
well, sure. Sure. Yes. But it is also good to recognize the positives and also use that recognition to say, can I even do better? Or right. Did I do it right? And that's as good as it gets. And that's okay too.
Yeah. And I think the other thing to it is like not it's recognizing the positives and recognizing also that like sometimes your positives are going to be different. Like your milestones are going to be different than somebody else's milestones. And, you know, I think one of the greatest gifts that I have as, you know, being my kiddo's parent is just like his milestones were way different. Like I remember texting friends like, oh my gosh, y'all, like he lied to me. This is such a huge thing for him. He's never lied to me before. Because for a kid who is honest to a fault, you know, and realistically, socially, we all need the ability to do some little white lies so we don't hurt people's feelings. It was a milestone. And I think we can celebrate that sometimes our milestones might look different, and that's okay. And it's, there's no, that, you know, what is a celebration for me as a teacher might be very different than, for someone else, or the same as a parent, or, you know, as an employee or something like that.
But on the other hand, if you had a big lie, what did you do about that?
We have a rule in my house that if, my kiddo says to me, I have something to tell you, and don't get mad, that is the rule. I don't get mad. And so it gives me a little bit of time to center myself. And then we work on kind of figuring out like what happened, why, what fueled that that piece? Like, was he trying to solve it on his own? What can we learn from that process? But, you know, that being said, you know, I mean, sometimes there's consequences. some lies, you know, it's not, you know, especially now at 14, we're not dealing with like little things anymore. They're 14-year-old problems. So,
but I like what you said. And I assume it's some one of the things that you would say about or to incoming teachers or to anyone, never stop learning. I think that's mm-hmm. extremely important. I learned early on, well, I've heard it several times, but I learned early on in a sales course that I took that as a person in sales, you should always be learning. And the day you decide you know it all, that's the day you go to failure.
Right. Yes. Yes. Because I think there's always more to learn. And I think the moment we're stuck in that, where we feel like we're done, then, you know, we're making assumptions. We're not fully, treating maybe the other people in that we're interacting with, as full people anymore. We think we've got it all figured out. And especially as teachers, like you never have everybody figured out.
And that's okay.
Yes. Yeah. And we shouldn't. I think that would probably be too much responsibility for any one person to have all those parts and pieces and hold all of it. I think it would be probably pretty pretty like I would be stuck. I wouldn't know what to do with all that information.
Yeah. That's brain overload.
Yes, for sure.
Well, as a teacher and as an online teacher that I would think gets to know their students well and allows their students to get to know them very well. What's one thing that your students are surprised to learn about you?
I mean, definitely it always takes them off guard when I tell them that I had 7 majors in college, because, you know, they see me, you know, as someone who has a PhD, like, boy, I must have had my life always together. And that's helpful for them to know, because I think it just normalizes, you know, for a lot of my students, like this isn't their first time in college. They might have, you know, tried going to college a few times and you know, now they're really trying to make another go of it. So I think that's always something that is interesting to them. I think the other thing that always surprises them is to learn how long it took me to get my PhD. I had some health things going on. I had a baby. My baby had a lot of very intense needs. and I was working. I was, you know, I had multiple like adjunct gigs and working part-time. And so that degree took some time. And I think, again, you know, that it really normalizes that part of it. And I think, you know, the other thing too, that I share with them is like, hey, you're always going to have people who doubt you. And, you know, I did have faculty in college who felt like you don't have what it takes to go and get your graduate degree. Like, straight up, you're not smart enough. And I am one of those people that's just super stubborn. And so I was like, well, I'll show you. Yeah. And so that's
nice to have a challenge.
Right. Well, I'll prove you wrong. And so I think, you know, giving them some stories, you know, that help them to, you know, normalize their path. And one thing I always try to tell them is like, you know, you have to own your path. Like, you own your story and don't see it as a source of, you know, shame or something you need to make an excuse for. So what? So you had a non-traditional path. Okay, but it brings a strength, you know, to that classroom. So you were in IT first. Great. Like, now you're going to be a social studies teacher. Fantastic. Like, lean into that. That is a strength. It's not a weakness. But I think we can get trapped into those narratives that we tell that, you know, I don't know, we call them in our house doubt bunnies. Like, I mean, just, they can sometimes get really loud, and cause us to doubt ourselves. And they're not always telling us the truth.
My freshman geography teacher in high school, I remember once told us that we'll probably take aptitude tests in our lives and people will always try to tell us what they think we should do and what we can and can't do, which is kind of what you're saying some mm-hmm. people said about you. And he said that he took an aptitude test once that said he should be a plumber. And he said, for a while, I believed it. And then I realized I could teach and I became a geography teacher. And he was a good teacher, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, I think, you know, I think we have a lot open to us. And I think, you know, really figuring out what we want to do, what drives us, what makes us excited. I'm always surprised in some of like, that's like, well, what jobs do you think are good for someone, you know, with, you know, ADHD or in some other groups, you know, if you're autistic, what jobs are good? And it's like, ultimately it always comes down to, well, what interests you? Yeah. What motivates you? If you're interested in teaching, you will make it work. If you're interested in law, you will make that work because, you know, your focus will be on it. Your attention will be on it. You know, rarely a path, I think, that can't be done. You know, it's about finding ways that make it work for you.
That's exactly it. You may need to find and even create new tools exactly. or find innovative ways to use old tools.
Exactly.
But blindness, for example, does not define me as right. much as people want it to. And ADHD isn't what defines you. Although too many people try to put everyone in little boxes. Well, that just doesn't work.
Right. Right. Yes. And I mean, I think that's something, you know, I try to impart to on my students that they really need to think about all the students that are going to be in their classroom so that they don't do that, right? Like, you don't want to pass that on. Like, well, you can't do this because instead, like, well, what's the path that they can do it? Because that's our job, right? So everyone should be able to learn. So how are you going to get them there? You know, that's the heart of teaching. That's the call to service. How are you going to make that happen for all of your students?
Well, speaking of learning, you said you had 7 majors. Did you graduate with all of them?
I didn't. No, I graduated with a creative writing degree. My minor was in fine arts, and I was a couple credits shy also of like an anthropology minor and I maybe one other one. But yeah, formally it was creative writing with a minor in fine art.
That works.
It does. I mean, I'm a very creative person. Like, if creativity exudes, I'm like kind of a, I now I don't, you know, I'm not an artist. I don't regularly do art. I crochet all the time. Like, so it comes out in other ways, you know, often it's really beautiful slide decks uh-huh. for my online courses. or things like that. But it works for me, you know. I mean, I really do enjoy it. I enjoy fiddling with it. It gives me my little creative design space without, you know, without feeling like I don't have a space for it. Cause that's, right. I'm always unhappy. I'm always a little itchy if I can't be creative in the things that I'm doing.
So we talked a little bit about you having something that surprised your students. Has any student ever been sort of outstanding in your mind that has affected you or changed you?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's the gift of teaching. Like, we always have students who give back to us. You know, it's always, our students always impact us. But I did have a student who really changed how I presented myself with students. And, you know, I think it was at WGU. And so, you know, it's online. We can't see our students. So it does just make things a little bit different. But I had a student in conversations with her. We were talking about a children's book that she wanted to bring into her class. And over the course of that conversation, something in me said, like, it's okay, share a little bit more. And in the conversation, we both realized that she had lived in the same city that my father grew up in Morocco. And I was like, man, wow, this is one of those small world kind of a situations. And as we were, you know, talking further about it, you know, this was like kind of during, you know, anti-Muslim ban. And so, you know, things were very difficult for Muslims across the United States. And, you know, my student, you know, was definitely going through it at that time. But she paused for a moment and she's like, you're like me. And I was like, oh, okay, you know, and I felt very like, okay, I'm glad that she, you know, she sees herself here. But she's like, no, you're like me and you're teaching at the greatest teachers college in the United States. She's like, now I know anything is possible. And I thought, wow, you know, I didn't have to share that story. Like I didn't have to tell her about anything about my family. I didn't have to, but in that moment, I realized, you know, here I am, I'm always telling students like the power of story, the magic of story. And I was talking about storybooks and I hadn't considered the power of our own story and what it means to represent, especially as a faculty member, and how that might impact, you know, my students. And really after that, I really tried to share a little bit more of my story, whether that's, you know, sometimes in, you know, some of my online classes, I'll talk about how, you know, some of the challenges that my son has had in learning about, say, inferencing, which can be difficult for some autistics. And so, but I'll share that out as a parent, and the amount of, you know, emails or calls I get from students who then tell me, oh, my kiddo's autistic, or my kiddo has, you know, a similar diagnosis, and they feel seen. And I think that's the power, you know, of it. And I'm grateful for that student, for that lesson, because I don't know that I think I felt like maybe it was too personal and I just would keep it a little bit too close, you know, but she helped me feel like that power and how I can share that with my students. And then they feel seen and then they feel empowered, and it creates a much more inclusive space.
So have you ever considered publishing your own book, telling your story?
I haven't. I have written a couple of children's books. None of them, you know, got to a place where they were picked up by an agent or anything like that. But I think it's a great experience. And I do love telling, you know, stories. But it's a whole different, I don't know, it's a whole different drama in that world.
It is. But now today in our world, the other thing that we have is the ability to self-publish, and right. And that opens a lot of opportunities for people to more easily tell their stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So it's something to, you know, to think about. What are the platforms? I'm just curious, being technological, what are the platforms that WGU uses to teach, like Zoom or?
Yeah, so we primarily with our students, we use WebEx, which is very similar to Zoom. And then, so that's typically if we're having like an online class of some kind, that's going to be over WebEx. The majority of my interactions tend to be one-on-one interactions with students. So that's just over, you know, over a call, over a phone call. And then internally for us, the majority of our, like our meetings, our one-on-ones with colleagues and things like that are over Microsoft Teams, which I really like because it's really reduced the amount of email. We can just kind of quick connect with each other, yet another email, which anything that reduces email is a good thing in my mind.
Right. Yeah. Some of those tools are not, as from a blind person's perspective, as accessible as others. WebEx has had some challenges, and Microsoft Teams took a while. It's ironic. Microsoft talks about accessibility a lot, but it took them a while to really make Teams pretty accessible. And none of them are, from my perspective, at least, as accessible and as usable as Zoom. from a standpoint of just being able to really interact with the technology and others. But have you ever taught any blind students?
Trying to think. I'm sure that I have, because I know I've had to push, you know, make sure certain things, you know, had appropriate captions and transcripts and things like that, that could then be modified by the students. At WG, we don't get a lot of information always about our students, because the accommodations so much are built into the system. In terms of my time in the classroom, I think I probably had one or two low vision students, but that wasn't the typical, you know, student that came through my classroom. Yeah. But I have impairments. And so it's always been super interesting to me to kind of learn, you know, about all of the different ways to interact with the technology. And even my son has some visual processing things, and watching those two kids together, you know, show each other like the different features of their, you know, their Chromebooks or their iPads to make it work for them, has been a great gift, because I'm like, oh, I hadn't even considered that feature. I didn't even know that feature existed. And so I do get really jazzed kind of learning about all of those different things, because I never know when, you know, when I might, you know, need to use it or recommend it or, you know, something like that.
Yeah. You know, it's always an adventure. And we always, you know, it goes back to, we always learn more as we go along.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, this has been absolutely fun. I hope you have found it enjoyable and helpful. We've been going for quite a while, so I don't want to overstay our welcome with our listeners. I'd love to keep going, but probably should stop. But how can people maybe reach out to you or learn more about you and what you do, and maybe learn about WGU a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you can always find me on LinkedIn. So that would be a great way to connect. And then in terms
how do they of, how do they find you?
Oh, gosh, I don't think I have my I think they can look me up under Kim Cohen, and then they'll find the Kim Cohen that's affiliated with WGU, and that'll be me. And then I think, you know, in terms of learning about WGU, I would always recommend, you know, our website, which has got such great stories and information. I know I talked a lot about Teachers College, but we have a fantastic IT program and a business program and a nursing program, and all of them are fantastic. I talked my cousin into going back for school. And so it's definitely a place where, you know, if you're interested in remote opportunities, I would always check out, you know, our employment page. And then if you're interested in going back to school.
I'm assuming it's wgu.edu.
It sure is. Yes.
Oh, what a guess, huh? Well, Kim, thanks very much for being here, and I think inspiring us and giving us a lot to think about. And I hope people have enjoyed it. You've definitely shown, and I don't mean it as a cliche, but that you're unstoppable. I think the biggest issue is that you always are learning, and that's always a good thing.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, I think when we're not learning, then we're stopped, and that's not the place to be.
Well, again, thank you for being here with us, and we appreciate you and your stories. Tell your son to keep moving forward, and that's as good as it gets.
Yep. Thank you so much, Michael.
Well, thank you. And everyone who has been listening, thanks for being here today. Hope that you've enjoyed it and that you have been inspired a little bit. I'd love to hear your comments. Please feel free to reach out to me. My email address is michaelhi at accessibe.com, or go to our podcast page, michaelhingson.com/podcast. And when you're there, and now that you've listened to this particular episode, I hope that you'll give us a 5-star rating. We appreciate it very much. We value you. You are the the people who make us a success. And we love to hear what you think about all of our shows. And I know that Kim will love to hear what you think about all that she has had to say today. So again, Kim, thanks for being here. And we look forward to the next time that we get to chat on Unstoppable Mindset.
You have been listening to the Unstoppable Mindset podcast. Thanks for dropping by. I hope that you'll join us again next week and in future weeks for upcoming episodes. To subscribe to our podcast and to learn about upcoming episodes, please visit www.michaelhingson.com/podcast. Michael Hingson is spelled MichaelHingson. While you're on the site, please use the form there to recommend people who we ought to interview in upcoming editions of the show. And also, we ask you and urge you to invite your friends to join us in the future. If you know of anyone or any organization needing a speaker for an event, please email me at speaker@michaelhingson.com. I appreciate it very much. To learn more about the concept of blinded by fear, please visit www.michaelhingson.com/blinded by fear. And while you're there, feel free to pick up a copy of my free ebook entitled Blinded by Fear. The Unstoppable Mindset podcast is provided by AccessCast, an initiative of Accessibility, and is sponsored by Accessibility. Please visit www.accessibility.com. Accessibility is spelled A-C-C-E-S-S-I-B-E. There you can learn all about how you can make your website inclusive for all persons with disabilities and how you can help make the internet fully inclusive by 2025. Thanks again for listening. Please come back and visit us again next week.